Out of the black of the deep range and into the light of the deep strange. Cometh the hour, cometh the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM. Good evening to you. John D. Wells in the left seat for the Saturday night soiree. Yes, the deep range. Black of void and boring. Which is why I like it here. This will be an explosive show tonight. Well, I know you've heard that one before, but I'm not kidding you. Tonight we are privileged to have as our guest for the first time Roger Stone. Roger Stone. His book is The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. Now I know what you're thinking, but I want you to stay with me on this and I'll explain something that you might want to hear. Now, there haven't been many, but there have been two or three. Little emails come in. Kennedy, Kennedy, Kennedy. All this Kennedy stuff. Kennedy, Kennedy. By this time next week, it'll be over. 50 years. 50 years since the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And for me, this is not a somber time. This is an exciting time to be sitting in the left seat on the mothership that is Coast to Coast AM, blowing this stuff out all over the place. Now, I'm going to do a double segue here, and I want you to stay with me. We are a fast food, movies on demand, sound bite society. We get a taste and move on. As Al Pacino said, as the devil and devil's advocate, taste, but don't swallow. This program tonight is a lot to swallow, and your keen attention is requested. And that said, it is required. Segway number one. Quantum physics proves that there is an afterlife, claims scientist. Robert Lanza claims the theory of biocentrism says death is an illusion. He said life creates the universe and not the other way around. Sorry, Larry. This means space and time don't exist in the linear fashion we think it does. He uses the famous double split experiment to illustrate his point. And if space and time are not linear, then death cannot exist in any real sense either. Now, I'm going to read a little bit of this for you. Particularly the part about the double split experiment. Lanza cites that the double slit test, to back up his claims, when scientists watch a particle pass through two slits, the particle goes through one slit or the other. If a person does not watch it, it acts like a wave and can go through both slits simultaneously. This means its behavior changes based on a person's perception. So by looking at the universe from a biocentric's point of view, this also means space and time don't behave in the hard and fast ways our consciousness tells us it does. In summary, space and time are simply tools of our minds. Once this theory about space and time being mental constructs is accepted, it means death and the idea of immortality exist in a world without spatial or linear boundaries. Well, that's Neville Goddard, too. Neville Goddard, he was one of the foremost speakers, researchers, writers about the, or during the New Thought era of the 30s, who asserted that there is no reality without consciousness. Dreams, therefore, are real, are they not? Where you go in them is real, based on your individual consciousness. Is the fact that so many people dream similar dreams indicative of a true reality? To me, yes. We live on Earth. We share an earthly existence, in earthling bodies. Language, customs, clothing, technology, and circumstances differ. But that's about it. So, what is important about Kennedy? we remember and question and investigate. And it's important. The emails say, why do this? Why do this? Let us heal. It's been so long ago, let us heal. We can't heal. We cannot heal. We need the truth to heal. We cannot heal until we get the truth, and that is why we are here. Now let's go back to Roger Stone. Roger Stone ties LBJ to at least 7 politically motivated murders prior to the death of JFK, thus proving the killing of JFK was not the first time LBJ had blood on his hands. Lyndon Johnson's longtime criminal associate Malcolm Mack Wallace, a marksman and convicted murderer, was the actual gunman who shot JFK from the 6th floor of the Texas School Book Depository building on the 22nd, 1963, November. Not Lee Harvey Oswald. Stone reveals that a fingerprint found in the sniper's nest tied LBJ directly to the murder. Stone states Nixon and Lyndon Johnson's connection to Lee Harvey Oswald's assassin, strip club owner Jack Ruby, who is known by Nixon aide and mob lawyer Murray Chotiner, as one of Lyndon Johnson's boys. But John Kennedy was hit from the front. So much for the magic bullet. And now it seems a fellow named James Tague has recently surfaced, who's the third person that was shot on that day. It would be worth it to you. You know, going back to the soundbite thing, you have to have a book. You can't take it all in when you just watch a television program. You can't take it all in from a soundbite. Certainly, you cannot. But interestingly, he was talking with John Mitchell back in the day. And he told him, I might write a book about this someday. Mitchell took out his pipe and said, wait until the 50th anniversary. And he agreed. For those who wonder why I have waited until now to write this book, you now have your answer. This is going to be some strong stuff. We'll take a few of your calls for the first hour as we get ready for Roger Stone. And his book is The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. And it is a strong, strong case. By the way, go ahead and look at his website while we wait. StoneZone.com. StoneZone. StoneZone.com. You know, this is the man who brought down Elliot Spitzer. He's not only a political consultant, strategist, and lobbyist, but he's also the man credited with taking down New York Governor Elliot Spitzer. He's been involved in politics since he was a teenager, involved in every presidential election since 68, with the exception of 1992. You got me? Now, you're going to like this a lot, so get ready. Strap in tight. It's going to be good. It's good to be the host of Coast AM on such an auspicious occasion as we begin the run-up to the very last week before the JFK assassination in Dallas, Texas turns 50. Stand by. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Here's a little tidbit for you from NakedSecurity.com. The Electronic Frontier Foundation has filed a suit against the FBI to force the agency to inform the public about its ongoing plans for global biometric database. FBI is working hard on its next generation identification database, which will include biometric information like iris scans, palm prints, face recognition ready pics, and voice data, adding to its existing database of fingerprints for law enforcement agencies across the U.S. NGI will result in a massive expansion of government data collection for both criminal and non-criminal purposes, EFF attorney Jennifer Lynch said in a statement. Biometrics programs present critical threats to civil liberties and privacy. Face recognition technology is among the most alarming new developments because Americans cannot easily take precautions against the covert, remote, and mass capture of their images. EFF demands that FBI hand over details on the face recognition initiative, including information on the reliability of the technology and details of the FBI's plans to create a global database. Do you know? Supposedly, now we've just heard about it, so that means it exists. A drone, 200 nautical miles away, able to scan thousands of faces and record them all. I mean, this is just absolutely smearing chocolate cake on the wall crazy. And why is this necessary? I mean, that is my question. That is my quest. I want the answer to the question. I mean, is everybody just so, are we all just criminals? I mean, granted, after the omnibus crime bill of the early 90s, 3,300 pages long, I suppose a case could be made for every one of us being guilty of something. But seriously, folks, is this really necessary? I don't get it. All right, let's go to Skyline 1. Keith in Iowa, come on the bridge and let's have a chat for a minute.
Hello, Mr. Wells. We, the creatures of the night, salute you. I just want to chime in about the shooting at JFK. You made a comment before about how he was shot from the front. I don't know. I wish people would spend more time at the range on that one, because when you go to the range and you put up water bottles, the bullet enters and the hydrodynamic shock will actually cause the water to exit through the entrance wound. Hello?
Oh, I'm here. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. We're so quiet. Anyway, but it causes the water to exit through the entrance wound because of, simply, you know, just it's the first place where it can escape. Now, I'd even seen a reconstruction of the assassination where they used a skull that was, it was made by a props company in, I believe it was Australia or New Zealand, and they made a green, like a tapioca pudding consistency, where they actually recreated the shot. They didn't just end up recreating the shot from the approximate height of the school book depository. They recreated the whole spatter pattern of the president's brain going up and out, and even having one section of his brain that was in the original, well, in the actual assassination, there was a piece of his brain that got on the outside of the windshield. They actually had that reproduced in their test results shooting at the head, you know, in the position of the president. And while they were doing this, they were also going through the Zapruder footage frame by frame and pointing out things like you could not have made a shot from the grassy knoll because it would have killed Jackie Kennedy. There was no way to get a shot through from the front because it would have gone through the windshield.
Nope.
Okay. Anyway.
Go ahead. Lay out your case, and then I'm going to debunk most of it. Go ahead. All right, I'm okay, just giving you a heads up.
Okay, well, I have not much else to say unless you're going to say that it was the Secret Service agent in the passenger seat who shot him.
No, I'm not going to say that at all. Thanks for the call, Keith. No, I'll tell you this. Without going into a whole lot of detail here, I have shot and blown up all kinds of stuff over several decades. I have been witness to stuff being shot and blown up off and on for decades. And I never saw anything come toward me that was hit from the position where I was. Never. Not once. You know, when you go to a crime scene and someone has been the victim of a gunshot, the spatter's on the wall. It's not in front of them on the carpet where the assailant was standing. Number two, you know, I am looking right now at a piece of video. I have it frozen here. And maybe you've seen this film where you're catching the motorcade from the driver's side rear quarter at an angle of about 45 degrees. The lead car in this picture is the president's limo, followed by the second car. And right next to the second car is a motorcycle policeman with his white helmet on. Now, I can tell you that those cars, as they head toward the triple underpass, are the front end is tilting down. In other words, it's just a slight little grade. And in fact, I've spoken before about how the balustrade that comes across the triple overpass comes back toward the school book depository and terminates in this little garden area. Well, it's in this picture. And oddly enough, I mean, you can see this. It's been replaced by a wooden fence now, and they put some little trees there that are not very old. They're about 5 inches in diameter. They've been there a while. They've been there a few years, but they haven't been there 50 years. There are two big old oak trees, look like they're oak trees, that are there, and you can see them in this picture, in this where I've frozen this film. And I'm going, well, that's the little patio area right there. Now, I can't see who this is. I can't even actually determine. It's definitely a person. And he is on the same, I'm presuming. It's just a dark figure, all by himself. There's some guys to the right. You know, there's that modern-looking building, the I don't even know what it's called. I should know it, but I don't. And it's sort of Art Deco-looking thing. There's a doorway in there. It looks like just a little, I don't know. So here's a thing that we're going to build to signify that we have built something here. I don't really know what its purpose is. There's a lot of little windows in it, sections of 12 windows, little windows. And then to the left of that in this shot, there's the patio. And at the left of the patio, in the corner, there's a guy standing or behind that little patio wall there. I'm not going to say he's holding a rifle, but he's over there by himself. And then closer to that deco-looking structure, there are several people standing around in suits. With their, one of them has his back to this lonesome guy over here by himself. Now, when I found that little patio with the approximately 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet square hole on the floor, with the rungs sunk into the wall to be used as a ladder, it was part of the construction. I thought to myself, I would be looking straight at the president's limousine. So I'm looking at the cars, and I know from looking at the Zapruder film where the shot went off. I mean, it's a small area. You can figure it out. It'll take you about 1 minute to figure out exactly where it was. Now, there are several X's in the street over there. It's like, oh, there's the X. That's where he got hit. It's like, no. See, there's another X. And there's another X over there. So, no, that's not it. The X is in the street. That's not it. Understand that when the car is coming toward you, but it is going down a slight grade, the president's head was clearly to be seen above the horizontal line of the top of the windshield. You would not have had to go through that windshield to get to President Kennedy. More to the point, you hit somebody in the head with a rifle. If you're lucky enough to hit somebody with a Mannlicher Carcano, good luck with that. Good luck with that. It's not real accurate. It's not a target rifle. You're going to get spatter all over everybody in the car, and you're going to get it all over the windshield and all over the dashboard. You hit anything with these are deer rifles. The World War II people used to run around shooting each other effectively with deer rifles. It was brutal. This wasn't like just, and they fall over like they do in the movies, unless the special effects people get there and just like, okay, let's paint the whole wall with everything. Let's here, get that roller out. That's not how it is. It's a mist. It's a mist and chunks. It's disgusting, you know. It's the killing of a human being. Yeah, you get past that. I'm talking about the organic target. There would have been stuff all over everybody. But there wasn't. And if you look at the pictures, and I have seen the pictures, of the president with his back of his head peeled back. That's no hit from behind. And I don't see game or targets or anything else or water bottles. I mean, I'm telling you, I've been to the range many, many times, several hundred times over the years, and never seen anything come toward me. Never. Not once. Well, that was a long diatribe, but it's all true. That's my consciousness. Hitting John Kennedy with that rifle. Whoever fired it hit somebody. That's probably the one that hit Connally. Oh, and there's one more little tidbit. A nurse was present at Parkland who said the bullet that was removed. Oh, look, here's the bullet right here. No dent, no blood, no tissue, no bone, no deformation, nothing. Just a pristine bullet as if it had just come right out of the box, ready for somebody to reload it and make themselves a brand new cartridge. Now, when Roger Stone comes on here and starts telling you about the connections and the overlap, you're going to understand a lot more about why things that happened 50 years ago have a real slow burn and how they affect you even today. Once we have the truth, and once the perpetrators' names are put on a wall of shame so their names can be remembered for all time, or a good bit of it, in shame, then we can heal. And until then, like that little guy said in Last Man Standing, that Bruce Willis movie, when he gets rid of Doyle, he says, "And that's for what you did to my town." Yeah. And so is this. The Saturday night edition of Coast to Coast AM. The Man Who Killed Kennedy, the case against LBJ. Stand by. So the British security service guy asks the Russian security services guy, what's the FSB's opinion as to who killed John Kennedy? And the Russian guy says, the CIA and the mafia. I thought everybody knew that. 7 weeks before the JFK assassination, Richard Starnes for the Washington Daily News wrote an article titled Spooks Make Life Miserable for Ambassador Lodge, and subtitled Arrogant CIA Disobeys Orders in Vietnam. The article slammed the CIA's role in NAM as a, quote, dismal chronicle of bureaucratic arrogance, obstinate disregard of orders, and unrestrained thirst for power. The article went on to chronicle the turf war between the U.S. Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge and the CIA. Quote, twice the CIA flatly refused to carry out instructions from Ambassador Henry Cabot Lodge, according to a high United States source here. The article continued, if the United States ever experiences a 7 days in May, it will come from the CIA and not from the Pentagon, one U.S. official commented caustically. 7 days in May was a prescient book read and endorsed by JFK that gave a fictional chronicle of an attempted military coup in America. John Kennedy was so impressed by that book and its message that he even let them film the movie adaptation at the White House while he was away one weekend. You get enough dots upon that canvas, and before long, you can draw a picture. Let's see what Rick can bring to the picture. Astro line number two, out there in New York.
I called about one comment that you made at the beginning of the thing, but, you know, you listen to Coast to Coast, this is why it's such a great program, and a couple of things came to mind. So give me 2 minutes, I'll fire the two things off prior to that.
Come on. You said why,
in other words, talking about the drone that can, you know, get people from, you know, 200 miles away, whatever, and, you know, face, you know, that thing, you want to know why?
Yep.
Yeah, that's because it's part of the collective, and resistance is futile. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
They saw the new generation thing, and they just ate it up like it was the best thing since cream cheese.
Right, right.
We're all being fully roped in. If you know the capacity of this new facility that's going to open in Utah.
Mm-hmm. People think it's open now, but it's really not.
That's what it is. It's towards the board. Second thing is, the young fellow called up who had done some target practice or something like that. I was trained as a sniper 6 years after Kennedy was killed during the Vietnam era. And I'll never forget the first time we went down to the range and I had a high-powered rifle in my hand. And the instructor says, I want to show you guys something. And he said, this is what you're going to learn to do. And he took, I forget what it was because it was years ago and it was not a pleasant thought in my mind. He took either a cantaloupe or a large melon, Cranshaw melon or something like that. He asked one of the, privates, or people like myself, to go downrange and put this thing on a pedestal. Okay, so the guy went 300 yards downrange. You know what that is, 3 football fields?
Yeah.
Three football fields downrange. And he stands it up. There's a post with a little platform on it. He stands it up on its end. And then he gets down in a prone position with a rifle. I don't think it was a sniper rifle. It was like an M14, which is a high-powered rifle. And he takes a shot. He says, and we saw the thing fall off of the thing. He says, now, go get it. He brings it back. And when he brings it back, what you see is a hole in the front of the melon. Oh, the guy, when he did this, he said he's going to set that melon up. He said, the meat and fluid in the melon will simulate the brain and the cranial fluid within the human skull.
Right.
I want to show you what happens with one of these jacketed bullets goes in. And what happened was he fetched the thing, brought it back. When he brought it back, the melon had a hole in the front of it about the size of
7.62 millimeter if it's an M14.
The back
of the back of the melon, the whole back of the melon was gone.
Of course.
And that's what happens when you hit somebody in the field. There's a little hole in the forehead, and the back of the head is essentially just blows away. And the head,
yeah, it's called hydrostatic shock.
Yeah, and the head falls down over the chest cavity, and the body might take one or more two steps, and it drops. But but that's what happens. Now, when I got into this thing, I was told by people who really know in the field that the best of the best can hollow out a quarter at 500 yards and can hollow out a nickel at 250 yards. Think about that.
That would be Carlos Hathcock.
500 yards. When people look at the scene of that car, you know how far 500 yards is? You can't even see anybody. At 300 yards, the guy who's walking down the trail in Nam, he has no idea you're out there. He can't see you for love nor money, you know? And you're just like, boom, just like that, it's over with. When I saw that bullet come out in the Zapruder film, it was obviously he was shot, not the first bullet that went through the neck and got Connolly. Yeah, that might have come from the book depository, but the kill shot, the one that was a deliberate, that was an expert shot. That was a great shot. And that was not from the book depository. No way, shape, or form.
It You're right, man.
The book depository, just like you said, the brains would be all over the windshield, people in the front seat, everything.
Oh, it's true, man. It's absolutely ridiculous. And these guys just keep throwing out all this stuff. And frankly, aided and abetted by mainstream media. And they put all this stuff out there, confuse everybody. It all whirls around like in a blender. And you pour it out and go, well, it's an unintelligible mess. It's a goo. It's like putting a banana and a strawberry and a blueberry and a peach in a blender and going, and none of those various fruits are distinguishable.
Thing, above and beyond all this, because this was the impetus for the phone call this evening. And thank you for taking it. When you started the show, you said something about, you know, we're all going to be inundated with all this stuff on the news and the special things about Kennedy for about the next week or so, and then it'll just pass and everybody will forget about it.
Well, yeah, that's...
That I contest with you as being wrong. And the reason I contest as being wrong, and you can just knock it off to, you know, my own personal belief or one nut job's feeling, but that was a very crucial day, that day, November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah, I get you.
See it happen live.
All right. Thanks for the call, man. I got to go. I got to take the next one, but let me clear you up. No, I didn't say that. I didn't say we were going to be inundated all week and then we were going to get over it. What I said was we're a soundbite, fast food, movies on demand kind of society. And I'm getting a lot of emails from people saying, why are we doing this? We've had Kennedy, 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 Kennedy. I didn't say we've had Kennedy, Kennedy. I'm saying I'm getting emails from people saying we get Kennedy, Kennedy. And then went on to explain... Well, you're going to get Kennedy, and you're going to continue to get Kennedy until we get to the bottom of who murdered him. That was our president. It doesn't matter if it was 50 years ago. It doesn't matter. The effects of that assassination have been, all it did was result in, let's see what. I know. The Vietnam War. Oh, yeah, look. Look, you can't get all the information that you need from a soundbite or from a movie. You need a book. You need a book like this one, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. And when all this stuff comes clear, now you got another dot on the canvas. And you start to draw a picture and you find out exactly what kind of a country you live in and what your place in it is. And if you're okay with that, that's fine. But as long as it's, I've had enough of this, I want to move on and do something else. Well, then you go, oh, yeah, go ahead and take that right away from us. And, yeah, go ahead and let that agency do that. And, oh, if you're not hiding anything, then why should they be able to collect every bit of information on you? I'll tell you why they shouldn't be able to collect every bit of information on you that there is to be got about you. It's because it can be manipulated and used against you anytime that they wish. Now, if you're okay with that, step over there. The rest of you, over here with me. All right. All right. Sharon, Missouri, how you doing? Wild Four, what's going on?
Hello, John. I'd like to tell you what Kennedy's assassination meant to me.
Tell me.
I was a 15-year-old student in Houston, Texas. I had been born and lived in California until I was 13. So going to Texas at that time was like going to another planet. And the day that the president was shot, took something out of me, out of my heart.
Yep.
He was my president. This was my country. He was the man who said, we're going to go to the moon. We're going to put a man on the moon. He made me believe that my country could do anything, that my country was great, that all of the possibilities in the world, in my future, were all out there just for the reaching out of my hand and taking it.
That's right.
And I loved him and his family. He was not a perfect person. I know
nobody
that
is.
But he gave me a sense of what it meant to be hopeful, expectant, excited for my country and for myself. And I have never been the same. It was a watershed moment in my life. My president was killed. My country was damaged. I cried for 5 days, and I still cry whenever I see film or pictures of his son standing there and saluting him as his casket went by. I will never get over it. I want to know who did it. And I probably won't know before I leave this world. But to say that it has no meaning and it's just history, to me, I can still feel what it felt like that day when President John Fitzgerald Kennedy was shot. Thanks.
Well, you know, that's why we call this thing the mothership and rather than the fathership, because it took a lady to come on board and come up here on the bridge to say that. Yeah, you're exactly right, Sharon. They may have hit President Kennedy in the head, but they hit the country right in the heart and broke it. And thank you very much for your call. Thank you very much. I'm going to move on here, get a couple more calls in before we get Mr. Roger Stone on. This is going to be woof. Yes, you heard me. I'm using the expression woof. Wild Five, John, in Wyoming. How are you?
Fine, John. How are you, sir?
Just too good for my own good.
When I was living in Houston years ago, I not only researched this heavily at the Houston Public Library, where I saw in extra editions where the government was claiming four different rifles shot JFK.
Oh, sure.
Winchester Model 94 30-30 lever action, a German Mauser K98, an Italian Carcano with iron sights, and then an Italian Carcano with a telescopic sight.
Yeah, now, how about a 270 with a six-pair scope on it?
Ran the Zapruder film, unedited, about 40 years ago, and as Kennedy's car was emerging from the road sign, you saw this bush halfway between Zapruder and the limousine. They stopped the frame, they readjusted the focus, and you saw that Corsican assassin, that CIA freelance Corsican assassin with a suit and tie and a fedora hat pointing a high-powered scope rifle down at Kennedy's car. Now, fast forward to 1963, June the 4th of 1963, by the way, JFK issued Executive Order 11110, which recalled all of these fraudulent Federal Reserve notes, and in their place issued debt-free United States notes. So we were no longer being bled to death by the international bankers. So as soon as LBJ took over, he rescinded that order and recalled all of the debt-free United States notes, Series 1963, and reissued those Federal Reserve notes. Now, in 2006, just before I moved from Houston up here to Wyoming, I went to the Houston Gun Show, and guess who had a table just outside the show? Billy Saul Estes. And I had a fascinating conversation with that man, and he told me, he confided in me. He said, John, I had enough on Lyndon Johnson to have him hanged several times over.
So, yes, and Mr. Stone is going to make that case for you tonight, because Lyndon Johnson's career was about to collapse utterly and totally, and he was prepared to orchestrate this thing to make himself president and save himself from a political disaster. Go ahead.
And if anyone believes Lee Harvey Oswald used an Italian Carcano to kill JFK, They also believe Helen Keller just won the Indianapolis 500 driving a Yugo with no engine, no tires, and no steering wheel. The Carcano was the sorriest service rifle of World War II. It was thoroughly worthless, and I have had discussions with a CIA operative when I was working in Houston in 1991, and he and I were talking about this, and JFK was killed with 243 Winchesters and 308 Winchesters. There were multiple assassins, and 2 weeks after I spoke with this fellow, the CIA operative, he strangely turned up in the obituaries.
I'm shocked.
I'm not.
I mean, look at all the people involved
in that assassination who mysteriously died, including the cab driver who was the first taxi cab driver killed in Dallas in 56 years.
Mm-hmm. All right, John, I'm going to run. I got to go to Greg on Wild 3. Let's talk to Greg real quick. Thanks for the call, John. I appreciate you. Good stuff.
Hey, John.
Hey, man.
In 1991, you could go into any library in the United States and pick up a book called A Higher Form of Killing by Paxton and Harris. In 1992, you couldn't find a copy of it in any library in the United States. And you may be able to go on an international book search now and find it.
What's the name of it again?
CIA. It's got a full-page copy of a CIA agent holding up what looks like a 45 caliber pistol. In reality, it's electric, and it shoots exploding pellets full of shellfish toxin, which would explain the shot from the front seat, the driver from the front seat. It would explain his forehead exploding. It would explain no flame from the barrel, no smoke from the gun. Also, anybody that believes that Jackie Kennedy, who was a prim and proper little princess from the day she was born with a silver spoon in her mouth,
yep,
would crawl out on the trunk lid of a moving automobile in her pink outfit and little white gloves to pick up her husband's brain, is just about as stupid a thing to believe as the man on the moon.
No, I don't know, man.
She was taught to dive to the floor of the car. If anything happened, to go directly to the floor. And here she is going directly away from the danger. She saw what happened in the front seat, and she was going directly away from the danger. And the
as I recall, she was going back over the trunk of the car to help the Secret Service guy get up on the back as they drove off. But anyway, hey, listen, thanks for the call. I got time for one more real quick. Thanks a whole lot. I appreciate you. Don't mean to bump you off like that, but I got to. Brian East of the Rockies. Of
yeah.
The Rockies.
Hey, yeah. This is John V. Wells, right?
Yep.
Okay. You're wrong. She actually was crawling back on the seat of that vehicle to pick up his brains. And he was shot from the front. If you look at the Zapruder film real close, you can tell he was shot from the front. His head snapped back, not because it was from an impact from the back. It was from the front. He snapped his head back because his head was blown out from the back. And there's no way you can get away from that. You know what
yep.
I'm saying?
Yes, I do. He's gone. All right. Exploding shellfish particles. 308 Winchesters. I don't know. I'm thinking 270. Why? Because that was the hot rod cartridge of the day. Besides, Jimmy Hoffa made mention of using a 270 to get rid of some people out there in California, including Sammy Davis Jr. and Peter Lawford. We'll get into all of this and a little bit more, but what we will do for sure, as we wander around looking for the truth, as we'll keep clear of the chaff and the clutter and stick to the salient points so that we have nice clear dots on the canvas from which to draw our picture. Right after our news and a few other little things, we will bring onto the bridge of the mothership Roger Stone. His book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. Visit his website, stonezone.com, and stand by. This is the last week